Scott.
This is Pat.
In today's show, maybe you receive an offer for a pension buyout. He had a couple years of service at a firm years ago, whatnot. There's pension frozen. We're seeing this all the time. We're going to talk about it.
We're also going to talk about how Vanguard, one of the mutual fund giants, is getting the boot.
Yeah, a brokerage firm's kicking them out because they're not. Crazy. They don't want to pay back-end deals, apparently.
Crazy.
And we're going to talk with a caller about retiring abroad. So stick around for Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
And now, nationally recognized financial experts Scott Hanson and Pat McLean of Hanson McLean Advisors. It's Money Matters.
Welcome to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hanson.
Pat McLean.
Glad you're with us on this day as we're talking about the world of finance and hopefully having some fun. Myself and my co-host, we're both financial advisors. Don't let that scare you. You know, it's funny. It's funny. There are times I'm in public and someone I'll meet somebody. What do you do? I'm like,
you want to tell them?
Because our industry, anyone can call themselves a financial advisor.
And they expect almost immediately that you're going to start
pushing them.
Pushing them for something. Yeah.
My business card is a sponge, by the way. So it gets multiple use. I typically hand it out right away. Scott Hanson, and then here's the sponge.
And they can wipe the perspiration off their brow.
That's right. When I'm boring them into submission.
When you are beating them to death with your financial theories.
Well, I think a lot of people, they call themselves financial advisors. They're commission salespeople. They're selling financial products, et cetera. Here at Hanson McLean, Scott Hanson, Pat McLean, your host here in the program, we're certified financial planner, chartered financial consultants. We are fiduciary financial advisors. Operate a registered investment advisory firm. We try to run as far away as possible from any sort of products or product sales. Matter of fact, we're agnostic on that stuff.
And you could call this show, and we won't actually try to sell you anything. We hope that you would consider using our firm at some point in time.
Yeah, we've been doing the radio program for 20-some-odd years.
But call and
honestly,
ask
in part, it's good for a PR.
But the reality is call, ask a question. We'll do our best to help you. A biased opinion, and biased, it's based on years and years of experience of working with people and their finances.
Yeah.
And not biased by product. But speaking of, Scott, where's that article? I normally don't like to talk about the articles, but how?
We're going to get to it.
Are we? Because this was...
One of the major firms are no longer allowing people to purchase Vanguard funds there. We'll talk about why. And this gives you, it'll highlight exactly the type of conflicts that exist in our industry. We'll talk about that. But if you want to join us for a phone call, you'd like to be part of Hanson McLean's Money Matters, the number to join us is 1-888-2-HANSON, 1-888-2-HANSON. Numerically, it's 1-888-242-6766, but obviously we chose the number 1-800-2-HANSON, thinking maybe it'd be easier to remember that way. So, and if you're on your mobile phone, and if you're just go to HansonMcLean.com, you'll see our contact number. Then you could hit that as well. And during the time of our radio broadcast, it goes right to
how's
the
this
studios.
Work?
Our normal number is the same one that comes to our studios here during the time.
And so on the website, does it click through? Is that how it works?
I hope so.
Is that how it works? It's a marketing. So you could talk to us live through the web.
You know, you go to web. You look up someone's. How do you look up someone's phone number now?
You go to Google.
You Google a name, right? And then you see the number and you push it. And there's times every once in a while you're on a website and you touch it and it won't hit.
Which
the call
drives me
thing.
Crazy.
Thank you. Ours doesn't. I don't think.
Ours actually. You click the thing and it goes in. Then you talk to people and they're like, "Hey,
I'm gonna try that right now.
Thank you for calling Hanson McLean. How can I help you?" That's what they say. And then you can get on the air. You can ask your question about finances or politics or marital advice, whatever you want. We're going to only answer the questions about finance, though.
Contact. There it is right there. You hit the contact us. And there's a 888-2-HANSON. Look at that. It says call us at 1-888-2-HANSON. When you touch it, this little pop-up appears on my iPhone here with the numeric number, 1-888-242-6766.
How does it know? You're calling yourself on the show? Ringing.
I'm just testing. I know we could have done this before the show started, Ben.
But we got an hour to kill.
To kill. And it's our time to use as we'd like. All right. So let's. But we would like to take your call. We're starting with in Waco, Texas with James. James, you're with Hanson McLean.
Hey, guys. How y'all doing today?
We're doing just fine.
What
James.
Can we do for you, James?
Great. I got a question in reference to a defined benefit plan. I'm going to frame it like this to kind of lead into it. Y'all heard the novel before, Charles Dickens' The Tales of Two Cities.
Yes.
In that first paragraph, it says, the best of times, the worst of times.
Uh-huh.
Well, I went to work for a company about 35 years ago that had a defined benefit plan.
A traditional pension, right? For the rest of the listeners, that's your old school pension. You work there X number of years and you get a pension.
Which right now, private companies, less than 6% offer... Less than 6% offer a defined benefit pension plan. So I think I could tell you what the rest of the story is, but I'm gonna hear you out. So they came to you.
Sure. Well, they came to us after 24 years, and they soft froze the plan. It wasn't a hard freeze, a soft freeze. So what that meant for me is I was under 50. I didn't make the rule of 70. So instead of getting $4,500 as a monthly stipend, I was going to be knocked down to $2,900 because if you do the actuary on it, that's about 6 years worth of compounding, and those plans, they're back end loaded.
Mm-hmm.
That's right.
So, okay, so I'm thinking now I'm going to get $2,900.
So you know more about these plans.
So you were 24 years of service, 49 years of age. Is that correct?
I was 46.
Okay. All right, so you were, and it was a 25 and 50 plan. Is that what it was to full vesting?
Well, it was a full year vesting would have been 30 years total.
Got it. Okay,
every plan's different. Okay. So yeah.
Okay.
Right. So now you know y'all you think about those three legs when you're doing retirement stuff, trying to do all your planning. So this is going to be one of those dead bank cert monies. So let's fast forward now to 2016, 2017. What we're being told now is that we're going to be sold off as a unit. So what happens now is the plan, I'm probably going to either have to take it as an immediate annuity, which is about $1,700, leave it with the other part of my company that may get absorbed and they may buy the plan, or roll it over. And my question today is, what would be the best thing for me to do at this point?
How old are you today?
I'm 58.
And how's your health?
Fairly good. I'm in good health.
And the $2,900 a month is payable at age 65?
That's correct. Now, also, let me put a little caveat here. You know, because of MAP, or moving ahead for progress in the 21st century, a lot of plans are underfunded.
That's correct.
So what I did a couple of years after this happened, I really got really interested in done it. So I called Robert Dow, who is a columnist, or he does finances, and they ran the actuaries.
Mm-hmm.
And there's not enough money in there to meet those obligations, because I think they have to catch up over time.
Yeah, and you
so
can
if I leave it in there.
You could collect that same data from the Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation as well.
Okay.
And this is also protected through the Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation.
But not at a soft freeze at 46. His protection is very little, Scott. It'd be like him retiring at rather than at age 62.
No, right now his protection would be at the $1,700 a month, but there's also discounts back from... I think the protection's around $45,000 a year for a 65-year-old annuitant. And the younger you are, the less it's guaranteed. It's, think of it like the limits on FDIC insurance at the bank, right? $250,000. But same sort of thing applies here. But the younger we are, the less the limits are. But I think $1,700 for someone 58 would still be within the limits.
It could be. It could be. So, and what is the lump sum they're offering you?
The lump sum, that's where they go off the segment rates now. You know, it's no longer the Treasury, so they use segment rates. So the lump sum varies from $299,000 to $349,000, depending on what the segment rates are in the month of December.
Mm-hmm.
This coming December?
Well, that was last December.
Got it.
Of 16. So the question is, you know, could I roll that out and try to replicate that? Probably not, because I can't buy an annuity on the open market like the company could, because that's what the actuary told me.
That's correct.
So do I take it, the 17 a month, and hopefully in the next 9 years, just turn that around and invest that? Or do I leave it in there and hopefully they'll catch up with the funding and I'll still get my $2,950 when I turn 65?
So
when do you plan on retiring?
There's no certain time. I mean, I didn't have any.
You have done an incredible job of understanding a very complex situation. And the answer to this is almost everywhere you turn, there is danger, right? There's danger if I leave it and as a deferred vested pension, because I don't know whether the company will fund it. So I would start to see what the PBGC would insure this for on a deferred vested pension so that we can minimize the risk there. So if you get on the phone with the PBGC, they will actually tell you exactly what your benefit would be and how much it would be insured for if the pension went into default. Now, my own father receives a small pension from the Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation because his pension went into default for the company he worked at.
So here's one way to look at this, James. So let's assume you have a 30-year life expectancy. Okay? Let's just start with this assumption. And we can do these numbers in a number of different ways, but let's just start there. Let's assume you have a 30-year life expectancy, and let's assume that you're comfortable with a 5% rate of return over the long term. In other words, you think that that 5% is a rate of return that you can reasonably expect over a long period of time. We're just going to start with that assumption, right? If based upon that, the $1,700 a month, you would need roughly $316,000 for it to be a push here.
And what that means is if you bought a...
Or just, you know, if you had $316,000 today and earned exactly 5%...
It would be empty at 30 years.
30 years.
Okay. So that's kind of a hurdle for you. So if you think you could do better than 5%...
Because the number was, you said it was between roughly 3 and 350, right?
That's correct.
And then the second thing is, if you're married and you're going to take a joint and survivor pension... You would accept a lower number than the $1,700 a month. If you, in fact, if you typically for every 10%, it would it drop the benefit by approximately 50% to your spouse. So rather than $1,700, you take $1,530 a month, and at your death, your wife would receive approximately $765 a month, which would be 50% of your 90%.
What are you leaning to do? You obviously have done a lot of you've done a lot of research.
And what's the rest of your financial situation look like? Are you dependent upon this $1,700 a month? Can you afford to take risk?
Yeah, what I forgot to tell you guys, when they froze this plan, they opened up a defined contribution, and I've heavily contributed to that. So I actually have more in the defined contribution after 10 years than I do after 30 years in the defined benefit plan.
And how much is that amount?
That amount is like $390,000.
And I assume your home is either paid off or close to being paid off?
Actually, I currently don't own a home, but I have enough cash in the bank to pay cash for a home.
Are you married?
I'm married, and my wife's 8 years younger than me, and she's a nurse.
Well, smart man.
Now,
hopefully if younger and a nurse.
And if she has money, you married a nurse with a purse.
Yeah. Now, my total debt right now isn't $15,000.
All right.
But much like you guys, when I went to work young, you know, retirement for Social Security and this retirement was going to be 65. Well, both of those, we see that they've pushed it out now. You know, my retirement, full retirement age is closer to 67. And this thing where I thought I was going to get 45, I may get 17. Yeah.
Tell me how you've invested the 401k and your feelings about that.
You're talking about the defined contribution?
Yes, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, well, I'm a student of listening to you kind of guys and studying, but I have it in large cap, small, mid cap, international is what I have it all in now. And I have like some bonds, but I have like a 70-30 mix.
And during the market downturn, did you play with it at all? Did you change your allocations or did you keep it consistent?
Well, let me tell you that story. When I was in 1987, I had about 40,000 in the market, and the black market hit, and I was a young guy, and I went and talked to my neighbor. And I said, what should I do? He told me he was a doctor. He said, yesterday I was worth $500,000 on paper. Today I'm worth $350,000. He said, put more in it. So I know it's cost averaging over time. And when things go down, I add more to it.
You know,
what do you think you should do?
What do you think you should do? Because we have an opinion about what you should do. We want to hear what you think.
I have a feeling we're on the same page.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I like the idea of dead banks starting money. I mean, you know, the way I'm a saver and investor, I could let them pay me that immediate annuity and turn right around and put it in investment. I know we're in a volatile time in the market and we're looking for a correction. So for me, I'm not scared about what the market does because I always add to it and build. So I'm a good saver. I'm just trying to also learn to be a good investor.
So due to the
fact
that...
If it were me...
Okay.
Yeah, I would take the lump sum.
I think you should take the lump sum.
If you were retiring today, I might say take the pension.
If your wife was the same age as you, I might take the pension. But she's 8 years younger.
So you guys think if I take the lump sum and hoping to get a 6% return that I'll...
No, 5%. 5%. You're going to match it.
You'll match it. And not only that, you're disciplined. You're You're not a dumb guy. You are.
Well, just because someone could be a lousy investor without being a dumb person, Pat.
Well, that's true. So. No, but Scott, he does his research. Look at how he understands his defined benefit plan. You completely understand your financial situation. You're not emotional about it. The best advice
I wouldn't
possibly
put it all
ever,
in stocks by any
No. I'd do it just like you have your defined contribution now. I'd do a 60-40 okay.
or
70-30. Or
maybe even a little more conservative.
Maybe.
Well, that brings the question up. Can I roll a defined benefit and a defined contribution in together?
Yes, you can. Yes. You can actually roll it into your 401k if you wanted to.
Or into an IRA.
Either or.
So let's say they offered you, it was 325 today. I just took a number in the middle of what you're telling us. And you rolled it over. It was taxed. There's no tax consequences today. And you earned 5% on it. By the time you're 65, it's now worth 450 some odd thousand.
And then you could start a 4 or 5% distribution on that.
Yes, which would net more than you've got today and have the principal to boot.
And remember, this is not for everyone because some people are better off taking the defined benefit.
Typically, the older
plan.
You are, the more challenging it is to use a lump sum.
And the less you actually have a history of investing
That's right.
A discipline, the harder it is because
if you have no history of investing,
yeah. If you had said I've never invested and it scares the daylights out of me, we would probably lean towards taking the monthly pension on a deferred basis. But you're not that guy. You know what you're doing.
Let me ask you the protection you would get living in a retirement plan versus going to a personal IRA. Isn't there some protection one way that you wouldn't get the other?
That's actually a great question. It doesn't make any difference anymore. It used to be.
Which kind of
per liability?
Okay. Oh yeah, it's not going
to
make any difference.
Yeah, it used to 10 years ago. It mattered, but it doesn't anymore.
But as far as protection, the challenge with the lump sum, it's up to you, right? And you can invest conservatively and have a nice, be safe and high probability of a great outcome, or you can be reckless with it. I mean, frankly, we've seen enough people be reckless with their pensions. We've seen people spend it all in the first year and everything else crazy, losing on gambling debts, etc. So people have done dumb things with their lump sum.
But you don't appear
to be that
guy.
But we've also seen enough people over the years that have made wise choices. Typically, if you're under age 60, because you would probably take, as Pat mentioned earlier, you would probably take a survivor benefit, not your benefit. So I even used a 5% number. It's really probably around four and a quarter maybe is the kind of the bogey you'd need to outperform, which you can't do in a 1 year with any certainty, but
you can do it over
20 or 30
easy,
years. Yeah,
easy.
I mean, it's, yeah.
Sure.
So I think that you would roll it into an IRA or roll it into a defined contribution, your 401k. What you're looking there for is a diversification and cost associated with those investments. And don't get excited. Okay, don't get exotic. And don't talk to the guy at the bank that calls himself a financial advisor.
He's not going to do that.
Exactly. Now, let me ask you, here's a question I have back at you guys. Had none of this ever happened and this plan would end up paying me $49.50 a month, would you have took the lump sum on that or would you let it pay you the $60,000?
If you're 65, it'd probably be the monthly pension.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just because the older you get, the shorter your life expectancy is, right? So if you're 90, it's like, my life expectancy is 4 years or what? I don't know what it is. But let's assume it's 4 years. Well, danger, you live another 12 years,
But James, you could I could be talking to your brother, and your brother might have a different view of the world and a different investment experience, which would cause us to give him different advice.
That's
it's
right.
not solely right. driven by the numbers. It is not solely
Absolutely.
Driven by the numbers.
Yeah, I totally agree. Well, you know, one of the things they tell you to do is not only save for retirement, be as debt-free as possible.
That is correct.
And there's the big question. Take this cash I have and go ahead and buy or build me a house and have no mortgage. Or take it and invest it. Well, that's the great question.
Well, then, but you can't take it from this IRA.
He has other cash.
If you have other cash set aside, which you said you did, you would use that. And we agree, you should own a home in retirement. You should not rent because it's your hedge for inflation. Now, the question you ask, well, where do I want to retire? You know, if you want to retire outside of Waco, then do it now. If you want to retire to Fairfield, Iowa. Because you have a fondness of sorghum, you would build a house in Fairfield, Iowa.
Sure. Well, right now, the craze here in Waco is a fixer-upper. So,
yeah, isn't that where the Gaines, is that the Gaines people? Is that the,
yeah.
is that where
exactly.
she's?
Exactly, Joanne, yeah.
Joanne. Yeah. She says they built that little, amusement park for fixer-upper people.
Yeah.
What are you talking
about?
It's
right in downtown. It's some big silos, and they're pretty well known here.
Scott, so in the modern era, We actually have cable television, and there's a show called HDTV.
Oh, we stream now. We cut the cable a while ago.
Well, we have HDTV, and there's a show called Fixer Upper with this lady named Gaines and her husband, and they remodel homes, and it has become a American sensation. It put Waco on the map. That and some other incident that happened quite some time ago.
They live near Crawford, Texas, out where the President Bush has his ranch out there. So, they're from Crawford.
Yeah. And you know what, James, had you not said you're from Waco, we would have never guessed it by your actions either.
So, we appreciate the call. Please call us in the future with any questions.
Do you listen to us through a podcast, or how do you get the program?
Yes, sir. I listen to it every week, you guys. I've listened to a lot of people, and you two teaming up together, y'all got it going on.
Wow, well, I've been carrying this guy for years. Appreciate the call.
Nice. Glad you called, James. By the way, if you want a podcast of this, and we understand that there are a lot of people that aren't that technical savvy, which is fine. And I tend to be a later adopter on technology stuff. I'm not one of those that gets the latest gadgets.
But what did we do for our listeners, Scott?
If you go to HansonMcLean.com, we have a short video that walks you through step by step of how you would actually subscribe to the podcast.
And not only our podcast. Any podcast.
But
it's a universal. It's just us giving back.
No, it's self-serving because we want you to subscribe to our podcast.
Yes. Yes, we want you to subscribe to our podcast.
Yes.
And then call our show.
Because then you can listen to the podcast whenever you want, whenever it's convenient for you.
I actually really enjoyed that call, I got to tell you. I truly was impressed on his depth of understanding of pension plans.
Well, anytime someone starts the call and they say they have a defined benefit plan.
And a soft freeze.
Right.
You're like, he had a great understanding. So
yeah, and there was there were a lot of pension freezes in the 90s.
And not only were there pension freezes, now there's buyout offers. This girl I went to high school with, Allison, I asked her out twice in high school. She never went out with me. She called me recently to ask me whether she should take a pension or a lump sum on her.
And you said, look, you wouldn't even have a date with me in high school. Why should I help you now?
I didn't say that, but I did remind her that I asked her out twice in high school.
Did she have any recollection of it?
It was probably most of the girls I asked out in high school. No.
I didn't even remember.
I don't even remember. It crushed me.
Did it really?
Yeah. What was the last name?
It seemed like you've recovered.
Okay, you've got over.
Allison. Don't give her last name.
Why not?
If you want. I mean, yeah. I don't know. So much for anonymity of your friends.
Oh, or is this rich? You're getting evil with her now. You're going to out her.
She didn't. Wouldn't go out
anyway,
to.
Anyway, she called and asked the question about whether
soda with you
to take a pension or a lump sum.
We are seeing, we clearly are seeing times like this.
Where they are making those offers. They're trying to get the liability off the books.
Well, there it's.
And Herb's was from a large corporation that's financially secure. Single, I had her take the pension.
Because it made more sense for her. Every situation is different, particularly if you're married, you got to factor that in. If there's an age difference, you got to factor that in. If you have a health issue.
Oh, absolutely. That was one of the questions we asked him. How's your health?
Yeah, because you have someone who's got looking at taking a pension.
And a shortened life expectancy. Oftentimes, the lump sum makes the most sense if you've got a predictable shortened life expectancy.
I talked to someone a week ago doing some planning. They had divorce. Why am I going into this detail? Because that was kind of interesting. They had a naval pension,
okay,
that was split at the previous divorce. But his ex spouse was had some issues and all kinds of stuff, but some major health problems. And when she passed away, it's going to pop back up.
It's got a pop up provision.
Pop up back to his original,
which
amount.
Is rare.
So he's trying to do some retirement planning.
And you suggested
have her axed. No, what do you mean?
Send over some cigarettes.
No, I mean, it was an interesting.
It's a financial.
His financial well being. His pension was based upon
his wife's demise.
Essentially, yes.
But it's not funny.
It's not funny, but it was. But it's an interesting financial planning dilemma. It's like, how do we plan around that? With very high probability, she's got a short life expectancy.
But you don't know. Yeah. And you don't want to plan for certainty on something you don't know.
It kind of reminded me of there's an area of investments on
longevity insurance?
Viaticals.
Oh, yeah.
And
which, by and large, the viaticals, structured settlements.
Is that it?
No, but by and large, if someone pitches you a Viatical, which is life insurance. The name.
It's buying life insurance on people that are
life settlements.
Life settlements.
That's what they call them now. It's garbage.
It's morbid. Well, they're not necessarily. I mean,
stuff that's being offered to the average investor.
I'm just saying, when you've got an investment that's going to something that's going, you're going to have a financial windfall when someone else has passed away.
It's a little morbid.
It's a lot morbid. It is morbid.
Mm-hmm.
The definition of morbid, yes. I suppose. But I don't know. It's not. I don't know why we got off.
If you want to join the show, because you love these sort of conversations, 888-882-HANSEN. That's 888-2-HANSEN. And I can't say 888 anymore because Scott doesn't like it.
I made it one mention. It's easier, 888 as opposed to 888. But you can call whatever.
You're
anyway, we're happy to take your calls.
Stuff.
Hey, we're also going to talk about big firms that aren't allowing you to buy Vanguard funds. Go figure. This is Hanson McClain. We'll be right back.
Helping you take the worry out of your retirement. It's back to Hanson McClain's Money Matters.
That's right. Scott Hanson and Pat McClain back here with you.
Yes.
Glad
you'd like to join the show. 888-2-HANSEN. 888-2-HANSEN. That's 242-6766. Or you can go to our website, HansonMcClain.com, and there's a little button. You could say, talk to Scott and Pat.
No, there's not a button that says, talk to Scott and
Isn't
Pat.
Isn't there a button that says, talk to Scott
no.
and Pat?
I just went through 30 minutes ago.
You could actually go to our website, and it will give you the number there as well.
If you forget, yes.
Yeah, HansonMcClain.com. And you can subscribe to our podcast. You can sign up for our weekly email, which is filled with information about investing.
We'd have a good weekly email, I think.
I like that.
Anyway.
The marketing department takes content we create and
put it to work. An article about something.
A clip from the show.
Clip on something.
Some educational.
We just mentioned in the last half hour about the importance of owning a home in retirement. For example, we've got a link to a great article on that on our website on should you own or rent a home in retirement?
Yeah. That's third party. We didn't actually write that, but we thought it was relevant, and
we stuck it up there.
So put it there.
I found this.
Other people's content
this,
and taking credit for it.
Yes, we just erased who the author was, and I put Scott Hanson. No, of course not. So
let's talk about this large firm. Are we allowed to say the name of the firm?
Well, it was in the Wall Street Journal.
Okay, so Morgan Stanley. The title of the article is "Morgan Stanley Purges Vanguard Mutual Funds." Can you imagine what it would be like to be a broker at Morgan Stanley and
no.
they did this? This would be embarrassing. And why Vanguard?
Well, so
first
happened,
of all,
so
why do you want? Why? Well, let's start with why would you want Vanguard versus not want Vanguard?
So basically, what's happening at Morgan Stanley? And apparently, Merrill Lynch had already done this. I wasn't aware of that. Morgan Stanley says, "Look, if you already own Vanguard, that's fine. You can continue to own it here. They're mutual funds, and." We'll allow you to keep buying it for a little longer, but then we're going to shut it off. And we're not going to allow you to buy any more Vanguard mutual funds.
Do we own Vanguard here at Hanson McClain?
Yes. Yes. Not all of our clients, though.
Yeah, but many. We have it available.
Yes, we're totally agnostic.
We use it when it's appropriate.
And primarily for the index funds.
Yeah, because they're inexpensive.
They're very good at keeping costs down.
Indexing, yes.
Sometimes we use other brands of indexes for whatever reason. So... But so I saw this article and I thought, doggone it, when is our industry going to really grow up here? When are we going to mature and really take a fiduciary approach to things? So you understand if you go to the supermarket and the placement of the product, you might be at the end cap, you'll see they're selling whatever.
Pepsi.
There's a bunch of Pepsi stacked there. They don't do that because Safeway thinks that they're going to sell more Pepsi. They do it because Pepsi pays the supermarket some money for that shelving space.
That's what it's called, shelving cost.
And the same thing happened. I talked to a gentleman who's a manufacturer and distributor of high-end women's clothing. He was explaining the same thing works at Nordstrom's, one of his largest things. You basically rent the space within Nordstrom's. If you wondered why, you ever go shopping, I find it more confusing now because it's all by brand.
I haven't.
And I can't stand it. You go to brand.
I can't remember the last time I was in a...
It's because that's how it's... They pay for the and they guarantee a certain amount of revenue. I'm not an expert in that, but the same.
You're not an expert in women's clothing?
No. The same thing happens in our industry with brokerage firms.
People pay for shelving.
Now, it's different. I mean, you go into a Safeway or Kroger's or whatever, and you see an end cap where there's Pepsi. You're not physically walking in, but you might be either A, on their website, or B, talking to with one of their brokers. And mutual fund companies will pay to be
for that
promoted, to be distributed more.
The distribution
Different than the way Pepsi is paying to have their sodas, sugary sodas, sold through the supermarkets.
But some fund companies don't play that game.
And Vanguard is one of them.
They say, we're not going to pay anything to distribute
our
product.
Vanguard doesn't need to because
they're big. They're
bringing in tons of money.
Well run.
But the interesting thing,
and we're not, disclosure, we're not saying all Vanguard is good or all Vanguard is bad. It is an example of what is wrong with our industry is what is happening here with Morgan Stanley and has happened with Merrill Lynch.
Because when you have an advisor, your hope is that the advisor is recommending what he or she believes is in your best interest. And when there's a firm that says, we're not going to allow you, Mr. Advisor and Mrs. Advisor, to recommend a certain product because we're not getting any back-end revenue, we're not getting paid from that product manufacturer to house it here, that advisor is limited
so Scott,
on the advice that they can provide.
So this is a quote from the Wall Street Journal article, which says this is retaliation against Vanguard because of their lack or refusal to pay brokerage firm shelf space. Most of Vanguard's competitors pay Morgan Stanley between $250,000 and $850,000 annually in order to give their salespeople access to brokers at their office.
We don't make this stuff up. You know, we talk sometimes about the conflict of interest that these big firms have. We're not making this stuff up. It's not our opinion.
So what they're paying Morgan Stanley, the Vanguard's competitors, are between $250,000 and $850,000 annually in order to have their salespeople come in, maybe buy some people lunch, and talk about how great their products are.
So for independent advisory firms such as Hanson McLean, I know there's other firms out there, similar structure, we receive $0 in the form of shelf space.
Zero.
Zero.
And you can
go do research on us. You could pull up
our ADV.
Go on our website. You'll get access to, or just Google around. How do I get any more information on it? You'll see that there's a what's called an ADV Part 2. It's basically annual disclosure we have to file with the Securities and Exchange Commission. You'll see right there that we do not receive this sort of compensation. It enables us, and other registered investment advisory firms, for the most part, are the same. They realize you're creating a conflict of interest. If some firm's going to pay us $500,000 to recommend their fund over Vanguard, which is what Morgan Stanley's doing here.
Yes.
You think there might be a little pressure also on their brokers to recommend certain funds over Vanguard funds?
Yes.
Which is why I ask people, there's thousands of advisors out there. Why not work with someone at an independent firm? I also ask some of these guys and gals that are still at the brokerage firms, why are you still there?
They'll tell you.
This is 2017. This isn't 1990.
They'll tell you. There's normally some sort of handcuffs around them. Beautiful handcuffs made of solid gold.
They have a forgivable loan that if they leave, they have to pay back.
Or there's some sort of an option.
Ask your broker what would happen to them financially if they left that firm today. Yep. Yeah. So. Anyway, we're getting off on a rant now.
Yes.
It's just time for our industry to truly grow up. And there was this fiduciary rule that was pushed. Is it going to happen? It's not going to happen. We don't spend much time talking about it.
It's not going to happen.
I think it might happen. But in any case,
I don't think it's going to happen.
All right, whatever.
But we're going to take a call. We're going to go to Francis in Denver, Colorado. If you'd like to join the show, 888-242-6766 or always HansonMcLean.com. Francis, thanks for joining us.
Hello.
Hi, Francis.
What can we do for you?
Hi, Francis. You're on the air.
Oh, okay. I'm going to give you just a little background, which will, probably answer most of my questions and yours. First of all, I am 85 years old. I am recently widowed, and I have three children. My house is for sale, and I will clear about $400,000 my question is, I do not need this money. What can I do with it?
And why do you think you don't need the money? Where are you going to live?
I have already set a place up. I'm going to go into independent living. And I have enough money to probably take care of me for 10 years. So I'm thinking I want to give this money to my children. I'd like to divide it among the three of them.
If you only have enough money for 10 years, Francis,
yes.
I don't think you should be giving this away. Scott?
You don't?
No.
Oh, okay.
You could live.
I don't know.
Scott.
I'm trying to think. You're in Francis' situation.
She's 85.
Yes.
She has money for 10 years.
There's a good chance she'll live to 95.
There's a good chance she can live to 102. The kids are going to end up with the money at some point in time.
Why do you want to give it to them now?
Well, because I don't know what to do with it. I don't own a single stock or bond.
Yeah, well, don't buy one now.
No,
seriously.
Not at my age.
No. Don't bother.
Here's what... You don't want to give this all away. You do not want to give this. Because you may need it. And when you need it, you can't go get it back from them. And it would create great disharmony in the family. If one person spent it and the others are then helping you financially. So
yes.
I would take, if you wanted, go give each one of the kids $25,000 and say, you know.
Or something.
A little bit, a token.
What else do you have in other assets?
My assets are, would you believe, like I said, I have not a single stock or bond.
Yeah.
Over the years, we have lived very conservatively, and we have CDs, and they are staggered, and they come due, and they don't pay a whole lot of money, but I have enough of them to take care of me for probably 10 or 12 years.
And so you've got $400,000 or so in bank CDs.
I have more than that.
Oh, good for you.
She might have more than 10 years worth of.
You might have, but she's not going to tell us because she's 85 and you don't have to. I would put this in the bank CDs. I wouldn't put it in stocks or bonds.
I agree with Pat. And if you want to give the kids something now, give them something now and maybe evaluate it every year.
Yeah.
And maybe see how they do with it.
Yeah, because the worst thing you could do is if you live conservatively and pretty frugal and you give each one of the kids.
And your son-in-law goes out and buys a new car.
Bright red Corvette that says, the license plate, it says, thanks, Mom.
Right? Yes. That could happen.
That would not go over well. So do not give them the money. If you want to give them $25,000 or $30,000, yes, and put the rest of it back in the bank CDs.
Yeah, bank CDs are fine.
And you have FDIC insurance up to $750,000 on these bank CDs.
Yes.
As long as they're named in the trust and your three children are beneficiaries of the trust.
That's right. It is in the trust.
Okay.
So are there any limits to what I can write them a check for? I mean, how much money can I give them each, $50,000?
Well, you have an ability to pass along $5.5 million, roughly, either during your lifetime or at your death. So essentially, there's no
limits to speak of in this situation. There are limits.
$14,000 a year, whatever, but it doesn't.
There are limits, but it doesn't really. There's no taxes on either side of it. So.
Oh, okay. Well, that's good to know.
Yeah, but if you wanted to give them $50,000 each and put the rest $250,000 in the bank, I think that that would be very, very kind of you. And get a picture.
I think it'd be wiser to give them smaller amounts and see what happens with it.
And then make sure that
because then you might decide that. You might have your trust might be right now that it all goes to your three kids.
You might decide a charity's going to be the beneficiary.
You might watch it and say, I don't know if this is really the best use of my money.
Okay. Well, that's good to know. I didn't know that. Okay.
All right.
Well, I'll decide what they're going to get, and then I'll save a lot of it for me.
Yeah, perfect.
Good for you.
And I hope
and enjoy your new home.
Yeah, and have your son-in-law enjoy that new Corvette.
No, I don't want to buy a new car for them.
Yeah, I get it.
They also have grandchildren. I mean, I have grandchildren that are in college, and so they're going to probably use it for some of that. I could give each one of those grandkids $20,000, $25,000 too, couldn't I?
Or you could do it on a one-by-one, and here's a nice way to have a relationship with your grandkid is help them figure out the college costs, help them pay for some of their expenses for their books.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, well.
That's what, frankly,
well, I got to tell you.
Scott,
may I share a little personal information about my business partner, Scott Hansen? Sure. I met his nephew last week, who is a getting his doctorate.
No, he already has his doctorate.
He teaches at an academy. He teaches Rangers.
The Naval Academy. He teaches all these Army Rangers and Navy SEALs.
And he told me about how Scott Hansen actually helped him get an education.
Okay. I did. I helped my nephew.
He helped his nephew. And this conversation I had with Scott's nephew was, he was saying, I don't know what I should be doing to repay Scott. And I said, help people just like Scott helped you. That would be the biggest repayment. So helping the kids with a college education may be the best thing you can do, but keep at least $250,000 of those dollars for yourself.
Yeah, and if you want to help the kids, grandkids college, I think just directly with them.
Yeah, don't go through the parent.
Or if you want our opinion on it, if you go through the great way to have a relationship with your grandkid. Maybe you can say, yeah, they only love me for my money, but that's okay.
It's still love.
That's right.
Okay. Well, all right.
All righty.
No, but I feel better about what to do with it. You know, like I say, I don't need it. And so.
You may.
I'm just one of the few people that have, at this age, that I could take care of myself.
But you may need it.
And as a result of a lot of wise choices and hard work over the years.
So we appreciate the call. So,
yeah. Okay. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you, Francis. She was sure sweet. I enjoyed talking to her.
And very. My grandmothers lived until they were 97.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, I didn't really have much relationship with grandparents. Two had already passed away by the time I was born, and the other two were gone by the time I was six or so.
I had a great relationship with my grandmothers.
So missed out on that.
They were very nice. But like I said, she thinks she can be another 10 years. It could be 15 or 20. I mean, who would have thought, you know, when she was growing up that you'd live to be 85 or 90?
Yeah. 1-888-2-HANSEN is the number. Let's talk with Tim in Colorado. Tim, you're with Hanson McLean.
Well, yes. Thank you very much for taking my call.
Hi, Tim.
My question has to do with the possibility in retirement years of my wife and I living abroad. And we've done just some preliminary research. Some countries seem better than others from a property rights standpoint, whether or not you can own property, protections for expatriates. And wanted your two gentlemen's opinion. Maybe you've worked with clients, and maybe a couple of possibilities we were considering were Belize, Costa Rica, or Ecuador.
Ecuador, Belize, or Costa Rica. You know what's Tim. You know what's interesting? I had this conversation with two of my coworkers yesterday. We were talking about people moving to Costa Rica and Ecuador. And I've spent a little bit of time in both countries. And my son has spent an extensive amount of time in Ecuador. He spent 5 months there. The biggest issue is healthcare. That is the biggest issue. One of my coworkers has a relative that moved to Mexico and had some medical issues, and healthcare has been the biggest issue for them living in Mexico. The cost of living in Ecuador, phenomenal, right?
Well, the challenge with the healthcare, it's Medicare is not going to cover you outside of the United States. So you got to get back to the United States for your medical care, and which might be fine for routine stuff or if you know you need a heart bypass. But if you got something that's a major issue that you're stuck down wherever you are.
In terms of, they're very, very, all three of those countries that you mentioned, and we'll actually see Cuba come on the radar here sometime in the next 10 to 15 years as a place to retire.
Tim, how old are you?
I'm 58.
Okay. When are you retiring?
Probably 7-8 years.
And have you traveled to all three of these countries yet?
Haven't been to Ecuador yet, but the reason that's on my list is there seems to be a growing American expatriate community that's there because, not just of the climate, but because of the health care. You may know that Ecuador has a little bit of oil income, and supposedly their national health system is better than most.
That is correct. So out of the three that you mentioned.
I have a client that's moving to Belize right now.
That is one of the countries that has, and the cost of living is relatively low. You can get a beachfront. There was an article in the Wall Street Journal about 3 or 4 months ago about Ecuador. In fact, I was in Ecuador when I read the article about Ecuador. About these beachfront houses, condos that are selling for $350,000,
$400,000.
Good Lord. Because it's on the equator, hence Ecuador, the fruits and vegetables are out of control.
Expensive condo, though. $400,000?
Beautiful condos. Beautiful condos on the beach.
That's the top flight stuff.
That's right.
A couple properties in the 150 to 200,000 range right on the beach.
Yes, yes. Wow. That is, yes. And they're little Gringovilles is what they call them.
Can you afford to make that happen now? At least to have a place somewhere? Or rent a place?
Do a rental kind of a thing. What do you guys, let's talk about that. Is that a reasonable thing from a management standpoint? Let's say I make that investment now.
Yes.
Rent it out, Airbnb or what have you.
Well, you wouldn't want to do Airbnb as much as you would want a professional management company in that
vacation rental
city to actually manage it so that they've got eyes on. And that's a great idea. It's a great idea.
Yeah, get your feet wet. But here's the other kicker. Property rights. Is it the kind of thing where, at the stroke of a pen, I'm suddenly taxed out of existence?
That's
or
real.
Other hassles?
Nope, that's real.
Don't let Nicolas Maduro... gets exiled from Venezuela to go to Ecuador.
So that is real. That is real. The benefit of actually moving to Ecuador, Costa Rica, I don't know about Belize, is the fact that in Ecuador, as you well know, the currency is the dollar. There is no other currency in Ecuador than the dollar. So everywhere you go, it is American money, helps with some of the exchange. Right now, what we see is that a lot of Canadians that have retired to Arizona have actually run into financial difficulties because of the exchange. You won't have that in a country that is denominated on the dollar. So it's a great idea.
That's a very good point. And then diversification from a portfolio standpoint, why not keep some of the portfolio in real estate?
You could do that. I mean, that's a completely different subject.
You see, you said retirement's what, 7 or 8 years, something like that?
Yeah, I like to work, so I'm a little more before I go.
All right, so based upon that comment, I would actually say maybe you consider figuring out another home, one of those places you're thinking about retiring. Figure out a way where you can spend a little more time down there, even if it means you have to push out your retirement a year or two. Because your best time to be spending down there is when you've got your healthy retirement years.
That's right.
And you
know, you guys are great. And what I love about you is your retirement planners that are in it for us. It's not just about the fee income. So you guys are great.
Oh, well, I appreciate that.
No, but in all seriousness, Tim, particularly if you like what you do, my mom turned 78 a few weeks ago. She's working full time. Not because she
loves
it. She just enjoys doing it. I wish she'd come visit the grandkids periodically. That's another story.
Good thing she doesn't listen to this show.
But my point is, I think people are looking at retirement differently. And someone like yourself, you said, I love my job. You didn't say I'm retiring in 4 years, 3 months, and 12 days, right? So you don't have one of those jobs that you're like, can't wait to get out of it. You said you love what you're doing. I'm thinking, maybe instead of just having this one date where suddenly you quit working here in the United States and you move to a foreign country and not coming back, you've got a more of a transition time. You might find that you can kind of keep a lifestyle where you keep being part active here in the States and living part retirement.
I had a client that, where did they? They retired to somewhere in South America and they opened a winery. I don't remember where.
Well, there's a lot of wine regions growing around.
Isn't that how you take a large fortune?
That's exactly
right. So go spend some time there.
Don't do that for the money.
It is actually both of those countries. In fact, both of them are absolutely beautiful. My son spent 4 or 5 months in Ecuador, but we've been to Costa Rica, and they're both beautiful, beautiful. And the people are awesome. I mean, just really, really good people. So enjoy, try to get down there. And I would look at buying a house sooner rather than later and putting it into a rental pool. So appreciate the call.
Thanks, Tim.
Thank you.
That's interesting. I did have a client lived in Costa Rica for a while. He lived like a block from the beach. It was like $1,200 a month.
And did he like it? Or
yeah, he lived there for, 2 years. He actually said that drugs took over the little village. He said he noticed the change while he was there.
Oh.
Yeah.
You mean?
Like meth or something.
Oh, no.
Yeah, no. He said it was noticeable in the 2 years that.
Oh, whatever, no. That's
maybe it was 3 years.
Awful.
I forget, a short period of time in this little village.
That's awful.
Fishing village in Costa Rica. But he really enjoyed living there.
Yeah.
You know, it's
pretty it's going to become more normal to retire outside of the United States. It won't be a fringe thing anymore.
Well, for a number of reasons.
Cost of living, right?
If you live in the Bay Area, you've got a house that's worth $1.5 million, that would be worth $80,000 in most of the country.
Yes. Right? And you can keep a house in the U.S., a small little place.
Right. Maybe you've got family still in Northern California, so we'll all keep a condo. I'll live 90 minutes away from San Jose instead, and then I'll...
Yeah.
Yeah, I think you'll see more of that.
Yeah.
We'll so you mentioned that if the client has started a winery in Latin America. I did it years ago. I did a biking trip. My wife and I did a cycling trip through Napa. It's a short story. Pat, okay. I saw Pat turn. Pat turns his head like, oh, gosh. Oh, where is this going?
I hope this is short life story.
All right. So on one of the nights, there was a winemaker was going to talk, and I'm thinking, oh, great. I'm thinking it's going to be one of these pompous sommeliers. Not that they're all pompous, but I thought it was going to be
just
pompous,
most of them. I don't know any sommeliers.
Well, you know what I'm, you know the...
Yeah, the guys have those little things around there.
They know the wines.
Yeah, yeah.
They're always a little intimidating because they always know much more than you do. And
it's
you,
wine.
Got it. It's just wine. Right? So, my point was, I was expecting this, you know, this long thing. Instead, it was this awesome. It was the guy who retired early as an architect and decided he always had this dream of having this vineyard and being a winemaker.
Really?
Yes. So he talked about his experience. He bought 5 acres or whatever it was. And my wife had talked to me before, wouldn't it be fun to have a little wine? And I've always done that. So he talked about year by year experience.
How hard it is.
Oh my gosh, the pests the one year, the fungus the other year.
Yeah.
And on, and how much money
it's
he had spent.
Expensive.
It was like $400,000.
And then that's just growing the wine and putting it in a bottle. You have to sell it then.
So it was all his whole experience. He's not making any money at all. That's probably why he was getting paid to show up and tell his story.
Did you taste his wine?
Yeah, it was good.
It was okay?
It was okay.
My buddy has a little winery called Du Ragazze. I'm pitching it right here.
Not the same guy.
No, this guy is in the foothills of the Sierra Nevada.
But my point is, it's certainly not, you don't do it for the investment.
You do it for the dream.
And you better have a lot of money to dump into that, because it's funny. I actually enjoyed it, because the romance of the wine, and it took that romance out of it. It's a farming a crop like any other.
And a dash your wife's dream of owning a vineyard, which she was the best part of all.
She really didn't have what dashing my wife's dreams. Gosh. Anyway, hey, just a reminder, HansomMcLean.com's got a ton of great resources and information for you there. We've got webinars on a variety of topics such as Social Security and retirement. So check out one of our webinars at HansomMcLean.com. You can also sign up for our weekly newsletter. It comes out every Friday afternoon. And you can subscribe to our podcast by going to HansomMcLean.com. So I encourage you to do that. And we will see you next weekend. Enjoy the rest of your week.
This program has been brought to you by Hanson McLean Advisors. Any ideas presented during this program are not intended to provide specific financial advice, and you should consult your own financial advisor or conduct your own due diligence.